Good morning. So it's a week late, but I have some thoughts for you from a race we did last weekend. It's one of these times it's not going to happen. I just want to prepare you for that. But until then, I will share a few thoughts. So Joel, myself, Abigail, Greg, Rebecca, I think Emma, there was a bunch of us did a run last Saturday. There's probably more that I'm missing, so I apologize if I missed you. But anyway, I came away and I was thinking about something. Who's like really sweated doing some type of it's a hike, a run, working in the yard. Okay. So anyway, what after so let's just get into the nitty gritty of it. You sweat, things get wet. Has anybody observed your clothing after it dries? And what color do you see on that clothing? Irrespective, once it's dried, what color might you see on it? Yes. White. That's right. And why does it go white? Salt. Yeah. We sweat salt. And so after the run last Saturday, my kids were like, "Dad, what's that white stuff on your face?" And so I had like a, coming off the eyebrows. This is getting really gross. Coming off the eyebrows, I apparently had white coming down my face. To which my wife said, "On the way home, could you stop at the grocery store and pick up some stuff?" So I was shopping, looking like this. So I was thinking about it. It's so interesting. Because what I've discovered, as you know, the key, I would say, is still I'm on this journey. It was a ton of fun last Saturday because I had some competition, and that was lots of fun. And as I was doing the second half of the run, that is, of course, where you're starting to get tired and you start to cramp. And I was starting to cramp so much that I just, every time I would hear something behind me, I'd want to look back and just look and see, is it Abigail? That was the only question in my mind, is it Abigail? But what I have learned is when you're on the verge of cramping, any abnormal movement will induce cramping. So you come to realize I wouldn't even turn around. I was like, I'm just going to do one thing. I'm going to keep running. And try and do this without dying. But the other thing that I've come to learn, and I told you about this the very first one that I did. So how do you fight back against cramping? What I've learned so far, the simplest thing is salt. And so I could feel it coming, and I had this gel pack in my vest, and so I just sucked back this gel pack. It had 300 or 400 milligrams of salt, and then I had this powder pack, and I took the lid off my water. It's bouncing water out as I'm running, and I'm pouring this what is effectively just a salt pack into the water. I put the lid back on and I start drinking it before it even has a chance, I think, to kind of fully go through the bottle. So now you just basically, it tastes like you're licking on a block of salt, but it was like almost within minutes the cramping dies away, and that lasts for 20 minutes, maybe 30 minutes, and then the body needs more, right? And all of a sudden you're fighting it again. But I came away from last week and I was like, so interesting, because I have found, and the reason I share about running is I just think, we know Paul used it as an analogy, right? Yeah, I've run the race, I kept the faith, and he talks about it. And I think that I've just come to see there's so many wonderful spiritual analogies in running. And the most important thing is not the running. It's the spiritual aspect of what we do. Bodily discipline profits a little. Godliness profits a lot. But anyway, so you start to go into the Word. There's lots of interesting verses on salt. So let's look at them. And then I'll share some thoughts. I hope I don't lose you. Stay with me. I will try and make it simple. Because they're interesting. This is probably the simplest one. Matthew chapter 5, I'm going to go through them. You can kind of make a note of them. If you want to flip there, you can, but some of them are quite familiar. Matthew 5, you are the salt of the earth. Matthew 5:13, you are the salt of the earth. But if the salt has become tasteless, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown away and trampled underfoot by men. So maybe before we do this, we know this. Two most common uses of salt beside, like, flavor and preservative, right? We don't really use salt. I was thinking about that. We don't really use salt as a preservative much anymore because we have freezers and refrigerators, but it can be used as a preservative, but we know that it is used to bring flavor, to season things. So this one, it says, you are the salt of the earth, but if salt has become tasteless. So I'm going to take this one that, spiritually speaking, when Jesus is saying this verse, I believe it's speaking more to the flavor because it talks about it becoming tasteless, right? So we're to bring flavor, we can say that, of this passage. Let's go to the next one. It gets a little bit more interesting. Mark chapter 9. There's two, these ones, these next two are similar, a passage in Mark and then a passage in Luke. So I might not read these word for word because they're familiar passages. So Mark chapter 9, starting in verse 43, Jesus is speaking and he's giving some pretty strong encouragement. He says, if your hand causes you to stumble, cut it off. It's better for you to enter life crippled than having your two hands to go into hell, into the unquenchable fire where the worm does not destroy and the fire is not quenched. Then he says, if your foot causes you to stumble, cut it off. The same thing. Hand causes you to stumble, cut it off. Foot causes you to stumble, cut it off. If your eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away from you. Right? These are the three things he says to them. He's talking about disciples. So what's the conclusion of the matter? Then he says, for everyone will be salted with fire. Salt is good. But if the salt becomes unsalty, with what will you make it salty again? So here's the conclusion again. Have salt in yourselves and be at peace with one another. This is where it starts to probably get more challenging to say, what is he saying? Clearly, he's speaking in a parable, right? But he's saying you need to have salt in yourselves. So let's go to Luke chapter 14. This one's similar, but again, it stresses the importance of salt. Luke chapter 14. So that last passage and this passage, I think, are similar in the sense that I believe Jesus is giving guidance on what it looks like to be a disciple of Jesus Christ. If we want to be a disciple, he's kind of laying, you know, this thing of cutting off your hand and cutting off your foot and gouging out your eye. It actually is a fairly core principle to what it looks like to be a disciple. If we're not willing to do that, you're not going, he doesn't say it, but I'll say, I'm going to tie that here. Let's just read this one, and I think the similar principle applies. There we go. That if we're not willing to do that, it's going to be, I'm going to say, very difficult, almost impossible to be a true disciple of Jesus Christ. So then he says, if anyone comes to me, in Luke 14, 26, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not carry his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. For which one of you, when he wants to build a tower, so I'm not going to read, so now he goes into talking about counting the cost. And he's saying, look, if you're going to build a tower, if you're going to go out to battle, if you're going to do all these things, you know, sit down and count the cost before you do it. Because otherwise, if you go to build this tower, if you go out to go into battle and you decide, you know what, the cost is too high, the cost is too much, and you turn back, you'll look like a fool. So we need to be willing to say, you know what, am I willing to do this? Am I willing to count the cost? Am I willing to hate even my own life? Am I willing to cut off my hand? Am I willing to gouge out my eye? Am I willing to cut off my foot? If not, he says, it's going to be, you can't be my disciple. So the conclusion of this is at the end. The conclusion, therefore, salt is good. It's a strange conclusion to the matter. But if even salt has become tasteless, with what will it be seasoned? It's useless, either for the soil or for the manure pile. It's thrown out. Now here he says, he who has ears to hear, let him hear. You know he's speaking in a parable when he ends it with, he who has ears to hear, let him hear. So he's talking about very core foundational things of what it looks like to be a disciple of Christ. And he concludes these with talking about salt. I was like, Lord, I've been pondering on this week. I'm like, what does this mean? So here's another interesting one. Don't turn here. I'm going to quickly, because this is back in the Old Testament. Leviticus 2, he's talking about offerings. Leviticus 2, 11 to 13, if you read this, he says, no offering is to be brought without what? Salt. Every offering is to be brought with salt. I never read that passage before. At least if I had, I didn't remember it. I said, wow, every offering was to be brought with salt. It was to be seasoned with salt. Okay, let me share some thoughts with you. Running a race, I've come to the conclusion, as best I know it now, and my conclusion could change, that the most important thing to run a race is salt. If you'd asked me 5 years ago, I would have said, it's water. Now I realize the water is the delivery device for the salt. So that's kind of what my basic conclusion is now. But we can't do it without salt. Without salt, your muscles begin to just... And I had this, I was running, I was got to the last point, and of course, everything in my mind is, beat Abigail. Not that I'm competitive. And so the end of the race, the second half is, you climb, you drop a little bit, and in your mind you're thinking, if you haven't done it before, okay, good, the climbing's done. But what you don't know is the real climb lies ahead. And so then you just climb, and it's like, it feels like it's the climb that never ends. And those that I can look out and I can see smiles from those that got to do it, because they know what I mean. And so then you get to the top of this, and the end of the race is just this beautiful, long hill. It's a trail that doesn't have a lot of rocks or roots. It's a nice grade. In your mind, you should be able to just give her. Now's the time to just let her go. So what do? I just let her go. And what does that mean? That means changing my stride. And as soon as I change my stride, whoa! And I'm just cramping up. And this lady and I are passing each other back and forth, because then I'd get going again. And finally she's like, are you okay? I'm like, I'm fine. I'm just trying to get through the cramping. I'm doing fine. I'm just like, Lord, this is so interesting. Without this one thing, I can't do this. And so I'm literally texting Whitney while I'm running. I finally just said, pray for me. I said, I'm on the verge of cramping so bad, I don't know if I can finish the race. And so I've been meditating on this. And so, you know, I don't think, and the Lord says, he who has ears to hear, let him hear. At the end of the day, it's not some great revelation that is changing anything, but it's coming back to the core things. If you think about our walk with Jesus Christ and running the race of faith, you think about the one thing that we can't live without. It's the one thing that we need to have in us if we want to do this. There's probably different ways of saying it, but I'm going to say this word. I've been thinking about this, and I was like, you know, I don't think it's possible to do this without the grace of God. I'm not going to make it. I could just as much send a text to a brother or a sister and say, pray for me. Without the grace of God, I don't think I'm going to make it. Without the Spirit of grace, without the Holy Spirit working in our lives, I'm not going to make it. And that's so interesting to me, to think about this and to think about in this. And you think about, then I'm like, well, Lord, why do you conclude these passages about cutting off your hand and cutting off your foot and gouging out your eye and hating your family and your own life and taking up your cross and following me? And say, therefore, salt is good. Or therefore, have salt in yourselves. Because the natural question becomes, and these are questions, these are not earth-shattering questions, but they are real questions. If I am not going to finish this race of faith without the grace of God, how do I get the grace of God? It is the preservative, I'll say, that will sustain us through this race. So how do you get it? Well, I'll tell you, first thought is those passages are laying out a roadmap to get it. When you come to the place where you say, Lord, I'm so sick of the sin in my life that I'm willing to cut off my hand. I'm willing to cut off my foot. I'm willing to gouge out my eye because I will do whatever it takes, Lord. I want to be free. I want to be changed. When you come to that place, I promise you, the Heavenly Father will begin to give you the grace of God. But he's looking for that heart attitude. Or perhaps you come to the place where you say, Lord, you know what, Lord? If I lose my family, if I lose my wife, if I lose my children, if I lose my friends, if I lose even my own life also, Lord, I'm willing because I need this. I need you. I'll tell you, that is a recipe for laying hold of the grace of God. That is a recipe for all of a sudden feeling like if you're at that stage in your walk with the Lord and you're just feeling like you're cramping up and I'm like, Lord, I'm not going to make it. But you come to that heart place and you come to the Lord and with that attitude and saying, I'm willing. I can tell you right there, that's where God will meet you. The eyes of the Lord roam to and fro throughout the earth, seeking to support those whose heart is completely his. So when we come to that place where our heart is completely his and says, Lord, whatever the cost, I'm willing, then I believe that's where he says, I will strongly support you. And how does he support this? He supports us by giving us more of his spirit of grace to empower us, to strengthen us, to keep us going in this race. And I was thinking, it says, we'll be seasoned, everyone will be salted or seasoned with fire. You know, when we go through difficult times, it's obviously it's an opportunity. I look at that and think, what does he mean? Everybody will season with fire or salted with fire. Fire naturally thinks of hot, uncomfortable. I mean, I guess it could be comfortable if you're sitting beside a fire. But I think in this context, we think of it as being I think of it as a fiery trial. And I think of that in the sense of if I'm going to be salted with fire, if I'm going to go through difficult things, I think it's an opportunity for us, again, to come to back to that place of weakness. And like he said to Paul, he said, my strength is made perfect. My grace is sufficient for you. My strength is made perfect in weakness. My strength can be made perfect in the midst of when you are being salted with fire, when you are going through a difficult circumstance, whatever it might be. That is an opportunity where God says, I want to use this to give you a greater measure of my grace in your life. And I had this thought even, so this other aspect of the fact that why I started talking off about the clothes and, you know, my hat, everything was white. My face was white. I looked at my running vest, it was white. I looked at my hat, it was white. Everything was white. So there's the preservative to sustain us, but the interesting part is, so we're sitting there looking to take in the salt while we're running. I need this to sustain me. What's happening is at the same time as we're going through this difficult exertion, what's coming out of us? Salt is also coming out, right? So we're taking salt in to sustain us, and I think that's the preservative. Bear with me in my analogy, and you can correct me afterwards if you see it differently. But now all of a sudden, what's coming out? Salt is just coming out everywhere. And I think that's an opportunity for us. It says we are the salt of the earth, right? And so now is this thing of saying, well, how can I be this flavor to a perishing world? How could I be perhaps a flavor to a brother or sister who's hurting and in need of strength? I want to ask you this question, those of you walking with the Lord, the times where perhaps you've had the most effective talks with somebody, where you look back and you say, man, that was just so encouraging, it was the most profitable. I'll tell you, for me, it's when I'm at my lowest. If I've shared a word on a Sunday morning and someone comes to me afterwards and says, wow, that was a blessing. I can think of times at work where I was just at the bottom. I just felt totally broken. For whatever life circumstances take you to that place. And then the Lord opens a door to share with someone. And I just look at it after. I was like, Lord, you are an amazing God. Because I have nothing to give. But in those moments of weakness, his strength is made perfect. And all of a sudden, the flavor of Jesus Christ, the flavor, that grace. What did it say of Jesus? It said, John said this at the beginning of John chapter 1. He said, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we saw his glory. Glory as of the only begotten from the Father, full of grace and truth. John testified about him and cried out, saying, this was he of whom I said, he who comes after me has a higher rank than I, for he existed before me. For of his fullness we've all received, and grace upon grace. For the law was given through Moses. One could say truth was there before Jesus Christ. But when Jesus came, grace and truth were realized. And this is so important. We can have all the truth in the world, but for somebody else to be able to receive it from us, it needs to be seasoned. You can have the nicest piece of something, a nice piece of meat. I like to make hamburgers. That's what, about the level of my grilling capability. Don't give me a steak. I will mess that up. But I've recently said to Whitney, I just said, you know what makes the hamburger? Let's just get to the point. It's salt. That's what it is. The more seasoning I put on it, the better that hamburger tastes, right? You can have all the truth, but if you don't present that truth with grace, with mercy and compassion, it doesn't taste the same to somebody. You can go to somebody in a trial and say, hey, brother, sister, God causes all things to work for good. You got this. And you walk off. And if it's said with that type of hard attitude, do you think that brother or sister would be, yeah. And all of a sudden the trial, the burden seems lighter. They don't, right? Because it's like, it's, when it comes though with compassion, it's a brother or sister, I've been there. And you weep with a brother who weeps. And you encourage them and you meet them and you come with grace. And in that grace, you share truth as well to just encourage them. But it's that word rightly spoken. It's the perfect word, whatever it was at the right time. All of a sudden now, that truth was mixed with grace. And that salt brought flavor to that truth. That grace brought flavor to that truth. And so I've been thinking about that. I'm thinking, Lord, as we go through these trials, it's interesting that what we need is grace. But at the same time, it's an opportunity if we come to him and we're crying out to him, that God can actually then use us as well. And it can come out of us in the same way. And that is the amazing thing of Jesus Christ. That's what he was. He was just so different. Come to me, all you are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Like just the whole approach, people flocked to him. You think of the Pharisees, they had truth. People weren't flocking to the Pharisees. And the whole aspect of a sacrifice being given was salt. Jesus said to the Pharisees, he didn't get upset with them for bringing sacrifices. He said, you tithe mint and cumin, all these spices. You tithe these things. He says, but what about mercy and compassion? He says, and then he says, don't stop tithing the mint and the cumin. But you've ignored the better things, which is the mercy and the compassion, the grace of God. Come with your sacrifice, yes, but come, do it in a way that your life is a fragrance. It is the grace of God is in your life. Jesus said too, he said, let your speech always be with grace as though seasoned with salt. It's that thing that makes our speech so tasty to somebody else. It sounds crazy, but you know what I mean when you say somebody else can just take that in. And it's that word that just meets them right where they needed to be met. It speaks right to their heart. It's like, I needed that. And it came across in a way. That's probably the most recent thing somebody said to me was when I shared after having surgery and the baby, and I was just at my end, and I just shared the psalm that God had used to strengthen me and sustain me through those weeks. Someone came to me after and just said, I needed it to come that way. I needed it to come from somebody who was broken because that's the way I could receive it. I needed it to be broken. And to me, I see that. When we come in that way, then we share the truth with somebody, they can receive it. I can see it because it comes with a grace that is needed. So it's encouraging to me that in our midst of our trials of being salted with fire, we can receive grace. But in those moments too, that's where Paul said, he says, well, I'd rather boast in my weakness then. If your grace is made perfect in my weakness, then that's where I want to be. I want to be weak because I want the grace of God to be so real in my life. And I want it to be coming out that people could receive it. That people could receive it in a way that brings life. We need salt. Right now, perhaps, hopefully you can meditate on this. If you see it differently, that's great. But you can see as I share it why he would say salt is good. We need salt in ourselves. You're not going to make it without salt. You're not going to make it without the grace of God. You need the grace of God in your life. And if you want to lay hold of the grace of God, let's talk about that just for a moment. You want to lay hold of the grace of God in your life. It starts with that heart attitude of willing to say, Lord, whatever the cost, I want to serve you. That's where it starts. That's why I believe Jesus shares that way. If you're sitting here and you're trying to hold on to something, or there's just in your heart, maybe the Lord's putting his finger on something and you're saying, I'm not ready. I'm not there. I'm not willing to count the cost of that. It will be a challenge to lay hold of the grace of God. But if you come to that place, you say, Lord, whatever the cost, there's nothing greater. I listened to a little bit of a sermon this week, and it was just about finding God's will for your life. And it's so interesting when you sit there and you listen and you think about, you think about surrender. Well, what would the Lord ask? Oftentimes the flesh is right there going, no, the flesh is there thinking of all your hopes, all your plans, all your dreams. Well, hold on to that. And then this thought comes, and wait a minute. Like, where would I rather be? But right where God wants me to be. Like, there's nothing greater than to be in God's will for my life. Right? There's nothing greater. Why would I sit here and try and hold on to something else? Lord, I want to live that way every day where my hands are open in the sense that whatever you have, Lord, I'll surrender all. I just want whatever you have for me. So that's where it starts. That's how we lay hold of, that's the initial starting point. But it also says, there's another element, obviously. It says, therefore, having been justified by faith, we receive our introduction by faith into this grace in which we stand. If we don't believe the word of God, we have to. Like, these are the very foundational pieces. We need to have faith, and we need to come with that heart that says, I'm willing to do whatever you desire, Lord, whatever you want. I've counted the cost. I'm coming, all of me. I'm coming. It's all there. But then there's familiar passages, right? We need to be reminded of this, of coming boldly to the throne of grace. Once we're at that place, we still need to be coming boldly to the throne of grace, crying out to him. That's like when you're all of a sudden you're feeling like I'm weak. What do? Like, I'm sitting there. I emptied my vest. I had stocked that thing with gel packs and salt of all sorts, and by the end of the race, the only thing that was left were a few that kind of dissolved into some gross mess, so I didn't eat those, and I ran out of water to dissolve them, right? But you're doing that. You're coming boldly to the throne of grace, and you know what it is? Even when you feel good, even when life is going well, that's the danger, right? We stop, and I can tell you, so the analogy is the start of the race, you don't feel like you need it. So then it's just like, okay, 30 minutes, I'm taking a pack. 30, you're just disciplined because you know it's coming. You know that hill is coming when it's going to empty you of everything you have. We need to be disciplined in our life of coming to him consistently, seeking him first in our life. Even when life is good, we seek him first. When life is difficult, we seek him first. We're seeking him first. We know the other passages. He gives grace to the humble, right? But he gives a greater grace, James says in chapter 4. Therefore, it says God is opposed to the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. We are in that place of humility when we're weak. This is why I believe those things are so tied together. That's why Jesus said to Paul, it's in your weakness, Paul. That's where my strength is made perfect. That's where my grace is made perfect. Perhaps I close with this passage in Isaiah 40, a very familiar passage. Why do you say, O Jacob, and assert, O Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord, and the justice due me escapes the notice of my God? Do you not know? Have you not heard? The everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, does not become weary or tired. His understanding is inscrutable. He gives strength to the weary, and to him who lacks might, he increases power. When he called us not because of our own ability. He called us not because of some strength we had. He called us, he didn't call us because we were living a perfect life. In fact, where did he call us? He calls us when we're sinners, when we're living in sin. He's calling to you. He's calling to me when I was living in sin. You know, and then the devil will come and say, well, yeah, but your life's too much of a mess. You're too much of a failure. All these thoughts will come to your mind. That's why he's calling you. Because our life is a mess. Because we are a sinner. And we need a Savior. But he came to take the weak, the worthless, the least of these, and to make them something amazing for his glory by the grace of God. That's what he came to do. So it says, to him who lacks might, he increases power. He imparts his grace on the humble who just says, Lord, I got nothing to give. Like Jehoshaphat, Lord, these things are too great for us, nor do we know what to do, but our eyes are on you. So when we come that way, he will give his grace and his strength. Though youths grow weary and tired, and vigorous young men stumble badly, yet those who wait for the Lord will gain new strength. When I was running at the start, and I was running with a guy who was exactly half my age. I looked up after. And I don't know how long, 45 minutes into the run, he just took off, and he was gone, and he seemed so youthful. I was hurting. But I had some discussion with him. I thought, how fast do you think you're going to run this? And he told me some times. And I said, okay, well, I just said to him, he said, times that were longer than what I'd run last year. And I just said, well, I said, I ran it in a fairly, definitely a quicker time than that last year. And I'll tell you right now, I'm running too fast. I just said that to him. And it wasn't long after, boom, he was gone. So we got through the relay station, and then all of a sudden we started to climb, and there he was. He wasn't quite sitting on the side of the path, but he was not moving very quick. And he ended up finishing a long ways behind. And I just thought, it's so interesting, right? Like, our strength, the youth, whatever, we're not making it on that. He did finish, but the point being is we're not finishing in our own strength. We're finishing because we've come to a place where we realize our dependence is on Jesus Christ and on the grace of God. I really want to encourage you with that this morning. Yet those who wait for the Lord will gain new strength. Those who are coming to him saying, Lord, I need you. I need your grace. I need your grace to preserve me through this race, and I need your grace to make me a flavor to my family, to my brothers and sisters, to the perishing people that I meet in this world, to make me a fragrance of Jesus Christ to them. I need your grace for that, Lord, because you've seen what I can do on my own. It ain't pretty. They will mount up with wings like eagles, and they will run and not get tired. They will walk and not become weary. Anyway, some thoughts for you around what it looks like to be seasoned with salt and why Jesus Christ would say salt is good. Have salt in yourselves. I hope perhaps you're encouraged this morning, just refreshed in the sense of, wow, you know, the need we have of him. Just, it's good to be reminded of that anew, and so I just want to encourage you with that, see that, and yet just know, if you're sitting here and maybe you're feeling like, you know what, I'm not where I want to be in my walk with the Lord, then just come back to that same heart place of saying, Lord, I'm not happy with where I am, but I'm coming to you now. Just whatever you want. I want to lay hold of your grace. It says grace upon grace, or grace for grace. I believe we can lay hold, just like it says he gives his spirit without measure. These are they're one and the same ultimately. It is the spirit of grace. And so we can continue to grow in grace and continue to be able to can run this race and to be a greater blessing to those around us as we grow in grace and just crying out to him and asking him to continue to give us more of his grace.